Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 299. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsor, Train Heroic, who's a friend of both Texan Minds. Just a phenomenal group of people with a phenomenal product. So if you're in the market, please reach out to them. If not, just next time you see them at a conference or whatever, just let them know how much you appreciate them being part of the show. This week, I'm joined by a buddy of mine, Chris Tex McQuilkin. We've done this. This is round two. We did this on Instagram Live and had some tech issues. So we're going to make this a short episode just because we've done it once before. But I appreciate you coming back on the show, man.
Oh, happy to be here.
Tex is the director of training for Power Athlete. You know, John Welburn and those guys, just fantastic people, fantastic podcast. If you haven't been part of that, fantastic community, more important, do a lot of great things in the profession. But he's also been, you've worked with a couple buddies with Rafael Ruiz. You've worked with Donnie Mabe. You were a D3 lacrosse coach. You know, you played D3 lacrosse. Which one of those experiences, Tex, best defined you or had the biggest impact on you as a coach?
Wow. A great question to lead off. I got to say being a D3 All-Star, because it's an amazing opportunity.
I didn't say All-Star in there. I said you were just a D3 player.
Oh, I know. It's kind of a backhanded compliment that I give myself because, you know, there's no way I was going to – I mean, I'm from small town Katy, Texas, where football is life, and it was impossible for me to go play any college ball anywhere, but I did not want to give up that team life, man. You know, that small town, it represents you. So I didn't want to give it up. So look for an opportunity to go play any sport, and found lacrosse at 16 and played for a year and a half. And it just gave me that opportunity to continue to have the camaraderie, the brotherhood. And it shaped me as a leader, because it was my first opportunity to lead a team. I was a 3-year captain and, you know, just a backup, a number on the football squad in high school. So it was my opportunity to really develop and find my voice, which eventually turned into a coaching voice. So I had such great respect from the coaching staff and my teammates that I was asked to come on as a grad assistant coach. So again, further find that voice as a leader. You know, a lot of kids get that opportunity in the military. I did not seek military following high school, but still was able to successfully get that leadership school, you know, just through that opportunity of sport.
What a great way of putting that. I mean, I think it's, you know, when you try to make that comparison to the military, people often, you know, they fall so short of what that really is, you know. But really the beauty of sport and military and where they both kind of, you know, respect one another is that leadership training that you often go through, you know. And I couldn't agree with that more. I think that's such a great way of putting that. You don't have any time in this profession without having some mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and how you've learned from it?
It was with Mike Hill, Georgetown University. So shout out to him thanks for giving me the opportunity. And
shout out Mike and Mike as well. Another great friend.
I was seeking more. So I transitioned from a D3 sport coach, and I was a hell of a better strength coach with that D3 team than I was a sport coach. So I wanted more. I wanted more skin in the game. And Georgetown was right across the river from Marymount University. So connected to Mike through a friend, and he gave me the opportunity. I assisted with the men's team. It was my sport, but then got the opportunity since Mike was in basketball season to kind of take the reins of the women's lacrosse team, because he was on the road a lot with B-ball. And mistake as I made, I tried to truly take ownership too fast. of that team. So change the program, change the approach, and change what we were doing in the sessions versus connecting with the sport coach, kind of taking some direction with Mike. I went into too much hubris, too much confidence. I thought I got it, but he knew the team. He had him for years, and the head coach knew what he wanted, and I didn't necessarily apply that in my first sessions. So I had a sit down with the sport coach for the women's team, and he told me that he loved what I was doing, he respected what I was doing out there, but just it wasn't going to work. So I felt bad because Mike had to then, you know, reinsert himself to take on that training load, but I lost my chance. I really wanted it, and despite of my efforts, right, I thought I was intentionally doing the proper thing for the team, for the athletes, but it turned out not to be. So just, you know, that young go hard coach going in and taking too much control versus listening, connecting, and kind of observing at first. And man, I want that opportunity back, but unfortunately I have to take the lesson learned into all other weight rooms that I walk into for the first time.
Yeah. What a great message as well. I mean, it goes back to the old adage of, you got 2 ears and one mouth, so you should be listening twice as much and asking twice as many questions, and, you know, the whole deal. And so many times we, you know, we're full of that piss and vinegar, and we want that opportunity to lead a team, and you get it, but then you know, the good ones, they'll realize how quickly they don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. And until you're sitting in that chair and you're running a team, and the culture and the discipline and the accountability and everything that kind of ends with you, it's a big change for sure.
Yeah, and I saw it as an opportunity, man, and wanted to own it. Now, unfortunately, that was not the right approach. And, you know, that tunnel vision, when you see that goal, man, come to fruition, you want it, man. But I guess still taking a step back, there'd be a lesson to teach young coaches is just, yeah, take a breath, 2 ears, one mouth, sometimes no mouth.
That's right. And the probably the bigger part of that equation is we'll get into this a little bit later when we talk about sport coaches versus strength coaches, but there's so much that can be learned from these coaches. You know, there's so much that can be learned from these people that have been in it for 20 years, even if they're in a different discipline. You know, they're in sport coaching instead of strength and conditioning, or they're in business instead of strength and conditioning. Those principles of leading don't change, you know, and you can learn so much from people. So I agree with that. You talked a little bit last time, we talked about being a young coach and kind of finding your way in this profession. And you've really kind of found a really cool, unique niche within this profession of doing what you're doing now. But you've kind of dabbled in a little bit of everything, right? You've been in college sport. You've been in private sector. You've kind of been more, you know, now you're traveling the world and you're teaching and you're coaching mm-hmm. when you want to coach and who you want to coach. Talk a little bit about being a young coach in this profession and some of the lessons learned along the way.
There was a lot. I was very fortunate to be a sport coach first, because it put me in that understanding and perspective of the objective of every single preseason, right? It begins with those skills. So you're working on the fundamentals of whatever sport it is. For lacrosse, essentially stick work and positioning for defense. So I got a lot of reps of teaching those fundamentals within sport, which helped me in the weight room. And when I took on a crew team at Georgetown, again, I've never been in a boat, I'm a land guy, but I stuck to what I knew. We're going to begin with the fundamentals, essentially. So I looked at all the squats, the steps, the lunges that I was teaching the crew team as the fundamentals of their fundamental movements in the boat. With the lacrosse team introducing the Olympic lifts to the female teams for the first time, those movements, the fundamentals of the fundamentals, they're going to have to jump, to speed, sprint, accelerate, and do all these things. So I looked at my experience sport coaching, right, teaching fundamentals, but then in the weight room, the fundamentals of the fundamentals. So that is an important thing to understand, because if you want to make it as a strength coach, eventually going to get to a point in which you are training and coaching athletes that are far exceed your athletic ability. So where I understand the camp of you got to do your programs before you apply them, eventually you're going to surpass that. So you have to have an understanding of teaching movement, understanding of periodization, of programming, of planning for your athletes, whether it's, you know, one off season or 4 years developing an athlete, or even, you know, Olympic at level athlete. They're going to far exceed your abilities, and your experience under the barbell is going to be limited compared to what they can do. So it really pays off to dive in to understand the demands of the sport, even if you've never played it or performed it, to put them in a position and take them where they cannot take themselves.
Good. I couldn't agree more. I get crucified a lot when I say this, but I've always said that I think you can be a very good strength coach for a sport you didn't play, but I don't think you can be a great strength coach for a sport that you didn't play, just because you just don't understand. You just don't understand the game at that level, you know. And I think that's I think there's something to be said for that as well. But you're right. The fundamentals of the fundamentals. We talk, you know, you and I talk a lot about principle based versus, you know, philosophy based, and really dial it into what's the core of the message. And it kind of goes back to a lot of the work that you guys have been doing at Power Athlete lately, with really defining athleticism and what that means. And, you know, I mean, you and John and myself, I mean, we'll all get under a squat bar. We're not scared to get under a squat bar, but us squatting three times body weight isn't our main priority at this point. Talk a little bit about the definition of athleticism and the work that you guys are doing around that.
So this is based off John's experience, again, 10 years in the NFL and then 10 years traveling the world, working with the best performance coaches of all disciplines, from bodybuilding to speed acceleration to fighting science to even the top coaches at the NFL. And Todd Rice was his college strength coach, so he pays a lot of homage to him. But definition of athleticism: so the ability to seamless and effortlessly combine primal movement patterns through space to perform a known or a novel task. So our objective with that is to take a definition and train athletes towards it. So athleticism is probably the most overused term by a sports announcer of, wow, that was an athletic play, or this guy's got athleticism. So they don't necessarily know what, how to define it, but they know what it is when they see it. So that movement through space is a key piece of it. And then our primal movement patterns, this is where we really develop programming. So we break human movement into those fundamental movements. So there's 7, 3 for the lower body, and 4 for the upper body. Upper body, you have horizontal push, horizontal pull, vertical push, vertical pull, and then anything kind of an incline dumbbell bench press, for example, that's a combination of horizontal and vertical. And then for our lower body, we have our hip hinge. We generalize as a squat, but that's going to be your deadlift, your Olympic weightlifting, your front squats, your overhead squats. It's all hinging. So we're not saying kind of hinge and a squat are different. Nah, we're putting all that together. It's the action of the hips. The other action of the hips we have is our lunge. Imagine now your hips are a bowl, right? And then there is a vertical axis of rotation, like a Y axis on a graph that goes through the top of that bowl, that pelvis. And then your pelvis rotates to the left and the right along that vertical, that Y axis. That's going to be our lunge. And then finally, the last movement for the lower body. And now imagine a Z axis. So a straight line coming through your belt buckle, and your hips will rotate to the left and right. Your iliac crest will tilt left and right when you march, sprint, high knees, right? So those are going to be the three actions of the pelvis. So we have our hinge, our lunge, and our step. So an athlete cannot successfully hold a lunge, or their step up is limited left versus right, then I know that that movement will be impaired when they sprint or accelerate and get off the line. So when we're looking at developing athleticism, we break it into those 7 movement patterns, especially the 3 with the hips, and then hammer those home to drive whatever adaptation our athlete needs to be successful, right? Building armor for our contact sport athletes, or kind of really dialed in coordination and speed for our track or, you know, soccer. But we identify a limitation with one of those primals or all of those primals, expose them, give them opportunity to dial it in, just overloading with a barbell for an X, Y, or Z axes or rotation. And then what's important is we give them the opportunity to combine those movements, because that is sprinting, that is sport. So that's kind of a glimpse at how we look at movement and the known or novel task. This is more fun stuff because it allows us to get creative in training. Known task is basically anything that they do in training.
Right. It's
a closed loop. They know the start, the end point. They initiate. And then the fun stuff, which is sport, is that open loop. So the novel task, something they've never done before. So this could be in training fun stuff like tag, foot tag, spike ball, right?
Right.
So they're reacting and moving through space. And we use those open loop, those novel tasks as the test for our training to see where they fall. Do they have the valgus knee during that? Do they misstep or have a false step during those open loop? Well, then I need to factor that and dial that in my training. So we're preparing them before they have the test of practice. Because a lot of the kids we're working with and the athletes we're working with, practice is their game day, right?
Yeah.
They don't have the necessarily genetic abilities to just step on the field and perform. Now we're preparing them. And again, this is a quote I stole from Jeff Madden when I was interning with Donnie and Madden and Benny Wiley at Texas. We're taking athletes where they cannot take themselves. So power athlete, that's the primary thing. We're getting those D3 all-stars. We're getting those high school kids that are the third stringers, and we're putting them in a position to just dominate based off quality of movement, and the coach has no choice but to start them and give them more opportunities.
Sure. I don't think I asked you this last time, but now you take those seven areas, right? And when you're programming, are you programming, you know, is that you're trying to hit all seven of those areas three times a week? I mean, it's not your traditional kind of push-pull kind of methodology. Is it, are you going more of a total body approach more times a week? How are you breaking it up?
We definitely do full body every single day, but we divide it into that push pull, like you said. So we can still hinge with our hips push pull. So on Monday we're going to squat heavy, and on Tuesday we're going to pull heavy.
Right.
Both hinges, but one's push versus pull. So we aim to hit all seven primals every single day, but it's just a matter of volume and intensity balance. And we're going to lean heavily on intensity because sport is all about the replication of speed. Doesn't matter. We can do that one time, right? It's your ability to then replicate. And that this goes into my conditioning argument for coaches,
right,
a little bit, but so it is, we're hitting seven primals every day, but one is going to be the focus, or one lower, one upper are going to be the focus in a push pull breakdown.
Yep. Makes sense. You alluded to the conditioning. I know that's something we got into a little bit last time about, you know, sport coaches and, you know, conditioning after practice or during practice and just kind of a general viewpoint on that. Where do you think coaches miss the boat when it comes to conditioning in season?
Man, in season, off season, I think they always kind of miss the boat. They have effort of and building mental toughness of these pictures that they want to paint for their athletes, but they're neglecting those athletic abilities that they possess that make them who they are. So at unfortunate effect, whatever they apply most of the time, or they want to apply, takes away from what makes them special and unique and who they are on the field or the court. So it's a big focus of mine to kind of battle that and educate them and reverse engineer from purpose. And I provide three purposes for conditioning that are almost undeniable by a sport coach that they want it. First one is mental toughness. If we're working with individual athletes, our swimmers, our track athletes, we are going to condition to develop mental toughness, but it's important kind of how we talk and communicate. I want the movements to be the mind fuck. I don't know if I can curse, but mess with it. I want the movements to mess with the athletes, not the coaches, not the beat down, not, you know, water, whatever the hell they want to decide to do. But essentially we want the movements to do the beat down. Why? Because we can go back to the film, or we can identify where that athlete failed in that movement and then build it into the program or address it one-on-one with the athlete and have them acknowledge, oh, I made a mistake, or I quit, right? There's a difference between failure and quitting. We can acknowledge that with an individual. Isometric holds are a great way to do that. We still get the blood pressure and all the, a lot of the, not all, a lot of the benefits of conditioning with isometric holds. So it also puts our athlete in a coachable position. That's for individuals. For teams, it's all about camaraderie, right? They want to know that they trust the person next to them. And there's no better way to do that than conditioning, right? If the guy is relaxing on an isometric hold, then he's right next to my teammate that's fighting and standing up. One of my biggest pet peeves in team conditioning or team isometric holds is when the leader steps up and they say, all right, everybody down and relax. And we're going to go up and hold on me. One, two, three, up. I hate it. I admire the leader trying to step in and lead, but you're quitting for one moment rather than rising the and bringing the teammates up. So right. It's finding creative ways that keep our athletes healthy, but still build camaraderie. Again, with isometrics, I can have a pillar hold, but say, Ron, you and I are pillars right across from each other. We both reach our right hand out and just do the predator high five, and we're holding that position. So I'm not going to let you quit. You're not going to let me quit. And it's building camaraderie within that. So this could be, you know, timed runs as well. We are going to make this time. So it's not on an individual, say it's a team Indian run. But finding different ways that don't put our athletes in a position to get hurt or under a log or, you know, crawling.
Right.
Doing a lot of the quote-unquote military tactics or training that could potentially hurt or neglect or just take away from the I'm trying to think of a word because power athletes rely heavily on empower. Like, what is the analogy for or the antonym for empower? Kind of that's what's applied during a lot of these conditioning sessions by these sport coaches to apply or try it aim to build mental toughness, but
right,
put some kid in a corner.
Sure.
And
it'd be interesting to get in with John and talk a little bit about how mental toughness can be developed in those kind of adverse situations as well. I know that that's something that he faced with some of the coaches he's been with. There's a place for that as well. But it can't be done without trust, but What are the other two besides mental toughness? What are the other two? So
we had enhanced coachability and chaos.
Gotcha.
Right. And again, this comes from, we've traveled the world and taught a bunch of CrossFit gyms, and that sport is done as basically who's can be the best at suffering, where they disappear up into their own mind. Well, I can't have that. I can't afford that in sport. We need you to be aware. You need to be able to hear a coach's play calls from the sideline. You need to be able to listen to your teammates communicate. You need to be able to read the offense or the defense or get into that position. So your heart rate is jacked, but your hand is steady.
Right.
So that's the objective. And this goes to the Ruiz, right? The mind trick of there's an inverse relationship between logic and stress. Stress goes up, logic goes down. So our objective is essentially to increase your ability to maintain your logic and awareness as the stress increases. That should be the purpose of conditioning, and that I should be coaching during conditioning versus just cranking the volume up and letting them go ham. No, they need to be turned in and dialed in and be able to take feedback, whether it's for lifts. If they can take feedback for lifts during that or movement during the conditioning, they can take constructive feedback from teammates or coaches to make adjustments for their movement on the field when it matters, when it counts. And final one is going to be decreased recovery time between maximal velocity efforts. This is probably my favorite and the one I will truly fight for, because what is sport? It's the replication of speed, as I referenced earlier. So to paint the picture, I'm going to use fighting. So big boxing fan growing up, Roy Williams, that I'm 33 today. Today's my birthday. So Roy Williams Jr. was kind of my guy growing up. And he was a phenomenal fighter because he was faster than everybody. He still had the weight, but he was faster than everybody. So what do his rounds look like? When he wins a round, it's not the total number of punches thrown. It's the number of connections that he had on his opponent. So it's the accuracy with which he threw those punches, not the work, the amount of work he did in 3 minutes. No, it was the accuracy and the precision. So if our objective in conditioning should be those maximal velocity efforts, and in boxing, right, it's in combos, 1-2, 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4-5-6. So Roy Jones goes close, 1-2, combo, 1-2-3-4, and then what does he do? He backs away. He dances, right? But what is dancing? It's recovery. If we're heavyweights, even dabbled in heavyweight, you know, they hug it out.
Sure.
What are heavyweights hugging out? It's just recovery before what? They're ready to move as fast as they freaking can again. So that's what, and again, I look at lacrosse, I look at hockey, I look at football. That's what these sports need to be training for, is that replication of their maximal velocity efforts. So I need to gradually decrease the amount of recovery time that I give my athletes, and we can progress and build true conditioning programs to accomplish that. We progress there, not necessarily volume, but taking away recovery time. So in working a lot with the CrossFit community, they had no idea of work to rest ratios. And that always blew my mind. Right. So I guess in working with two different communities, you take a lot of strength, common sense for granted, right? The curse of knowledge coming from a sport background going there, and then vice versa, coming from an understanding the GPP community coming into a college weight room. There's a lot that both communities take for granted that they can truly help one another. But there's a lot there.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I think for the young coaches that are listening to this, so important what Tex just said. You know, I mean, right there, in my opinion, something like that would get you hired in a heartbeat by a head coach, because explaining it from a sport perspective, rather than saying, yeah, we're going to go out there, we're going to do a 3-to-1 work to rest ratio, we're going to do open loop skills and closed loop skills, and we're going to be, you know, 25% ATP PC, and they don't give a shit about any of that, you know?
Yeah.
But if you're like, man, we're going to increase mental toughness, but we're not going to, you know, we're not going to beat them down, but we're going to let the exercise be the beat down, you know, and that they have, and we're going to introduce chaos, and we're going to enhance coachability, and we're going to decrease our rest intervals and increase our maximal efforts. I mean, that's exactly what they want to hear, you know, and how you do that and how you manipulate the sets, reps, and the exercise selection and prescription, that's, you know, that's art. That's just, you know, that's going out there, you know, and painting your masterpiece each and every mm-hmm. session. But the philosophy behind that I really, really love. Man, we end the show with some resources here. Give us best piece of coaching advice.
This best piece of coaching advice that I've received it from Ruiz in 2016. So this was at CSCCA in Orlando, Florida. Raph's based in Tampa, and he drove up just to kind of kick it and hang out with some old friends. And we were sitting by the pool, and he was in a reflective state. And I'll never forget this moment. Again, this guy is beating me down from books to lectures to in the pool and so on and so forth. But we were just kicking back and relaxing in a very reflective mindset that I've never seen him. He encouraged that I put away the strength books, kind of dive into my limitations, find a business book and just obsess over it as if you would the latest research. So he wanted me to take the mindset and the obsession, the passion that I have for movement and apply it into a major weakness, essentially business, and understanding how to protect yourself, right? You are a brand, you are a business, and prepare for just the people that will take advantage of the artistic individual, right? So I know it is uncomfortable for a lot of coaches, right, to get outside of that comfort zone, but he was essentially warning me and putting me in a position to you know, protect myself and really hold on to any brand or any, you know, that gusto that you got and not let anybody take you for granted.
Right. Yeah, I think it's something that a lot of coaches learn once you've gotten fired once, you know, all of a sudden you realize that it's fleeting in some capacity and it can be taken advantage of for sure. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
Book, I got to go anything by Robert Greene. In particular, for a young coach, he's got a book out called Mastery. And so this essentially paints the picture of what it takes to master your own craft. And he goes through the full amateur, the novice phase, and progresses on to eventually mastery and becoming creative. So you have to, and then one of your lines, Ron, getting to a position where you can learn, you have to get to that position before you can be creative. And I think it's a good roadmap. So that's Robert Greene, Mastery. The app, I'm going Slack. We got a great Power Athlete Block One community, and Slack is our opportunity to share, to kind of talk a little trash on one another, but still right. Just grow and develop from all over the world. And the website, I'm going just not strength, but it is called The Ringer. So Bill Simmons is a journalist and big Boston guy. I don't know. He's been around for a long time, but anyway, his platform, The Ringer, they have a lot of stories that dive into the personalities and the characters of sport.
Right.
So Ron, I know you have coached and there's a lot of guys that you appreciate from your teams that maybe didn't step on the field or, you know, they didn't show up in the box score, but they still had a lot of personality, character, and, you know, they brought a lot to the team. So a lot of the articles that they publish, whether it's NBA, NFL, baseball, it just kind of finds those guys. So I don't read every article on there, but if there's a individual out there that they're highlighting that ESPN probably won't waste their time with, I'm going to invest my time, man, because I miss the characters, I miss those teams, I miss those personalities, and I still talk to a lot of my former athletes that I had on those teams, and I just am very appreciative of the authors going in and kind of, you know, pulling some personality and character out to the non, you know, James Hardens. I love the Rockets, but, you know, PJ Tucker highlighted on there, that guy's a character, UT basketball alum. So, you know, it's fun.
I looked at that after you said it the first time, and I agree with you. I think it's a pretty cool site for sure. Well, man, as I said at the beginning, I mean, obviously, I think the world of you and think the world of what you're doing. And, you know, but to do this a second time, and especially on your birthday, just obviously shows as much character as you have, and tons and tons of great content. I even took more notes the second time around here. So appreciate you sharing, man. Appreciate what you do and everything that you're doing to give back to the community as well.
Yeah, and just have fun out there. That'd probably be my only piece of advice. Don't take anything personally. No one's out there malicious, man. So it's they're making decisions. They're making fast thinking, and just have fun. Everything is a learning opportunity if you look at it that way.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest as well as our sponsors for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefree.com where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefree's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefree in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefree can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefree, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefree. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.